I want to welcome everybody to the master's class. We are in the book of Romans, chapter 11, verses 16 through 29. And we're going to be talking about Israel and how they will be restored. And last week, we discussed God's judicial blinding or hardening of the nation of Israel for their rejection of Christ as the Messiah and their subsequent rejection of the gospel message. Paul described for us that place of special religious privilege that the Jews had been granted by God to be the channel of God's message of salvation for the world. But their rejection of God's plan and His Son Jesus as the promised Messiah caused God to remove them temporarily, and I'll emphasize temporarily, from this place of religious privilege. Since the day of Pentecost, it has been the church, the body of true believers, who have now occupied the position of being God's channel of the gospel message to the world. So Paul has given the Gentiles a warning that they should not be proud of the fall of the Jews and their own rise to a position of religious privilege. For this is but a temporary state of affairs. Yeah, and without a doubt, God's plan for dealing with the Israelites includes their restoration to the position of being the channel of salvation for the world. And that's what we're going to talk about here today. Now, in explaining to the Gentiles what God is doing by dealing with Israel during this period, Paul had hoped to throw himself into his great life's work, his calling to be an apostle to the Gentiles, and as part of the world evangelism. You know, some of his Jewish brethren, he was hoping by getting the Gentiles to accept Christ, that they would be saved even if that motive was just jealousy. Say, if the Gentiles can do it, well, then I ought to be able to do it as well. The idea is to get them saved. You know, whatever the motive is, get them turning to Christ, recognizing that, and believing in Jesus Christ as their Messiah and Lord. But Paul anticipates the day when the nation of Israel will embrace the Lord Jesus. He likens the resulting world revival that is going to happen from this event to the life from the dead. And in that day when Israel turns to Christ, the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And we had this verse last week in our lesson, Isaiah 11:9. So, we begin our lesson today with Paul exploiting what God is doing as he deals with Israel in this day of the church age. So Romans chapter 11, verse 16 is where we begin our lesson. And Paul says, "For if the first fruit be holy, the lump is also holy. And if the root be holy, so are the branches." So here, Paul's reference to the root and the branches introduces the illustration of the olive tree that Paul will use throughout this section of verses in our lesson today. Abraham seems to be the root since he was the receiver of the promises, although there are lots of commentators that describe Jesus as the root since he is described in Romans 15:12 as the root of Jesse. Romans 15:12 says, "And again, Esaias saith, there shall be a root of Jesse, and he that shall rise to reign over the Gentiles, in him shall the Gentiles trust." Obviously, that is Jesus Christ. Jesus is ultimately the root of every blessing, earthly and heavenly. Now, I don't know which it is, either it's Jesus or it's Abraham. The Bible didn't tell me specifically, but either one gets the job done here, right? So, the tree, if we believe that the root is Abraham, the one who received the promises, the tree is the race of Abraham. And in the next paragraph, Paul will define the tree as an olive tree, reminding us of Jeremiah 11:16, which says, "The Lord call thy name Israel," which is the nation that he's talking to, "but the Lord shall call thy name a green olive tree, fair and goodly fruit. With the noise of a great tumult, he hath kindled fire upon it, and the branches of it are broken." I can't imagine what Jeremiah would be talking about. What did Jeremiah talk to the nation of Israel about all the time? About their unbelief, about their belief of idols and other things that are taking place. So he's talking about the olive tree and the branches being broken off. And that's exactly what Paul is going to be talking about here today. So as we get into this wonderful illustration of how God views the position of the Jews and the Gentiles and his plan for them, the natural branches, or the good branches that we're going to see in this illustration, are the Jews. Those who first partook, I can say that word, who first partook of the tree's root and fatness. And then we shall see a few verses later, many of the Jews were broken off from the place of divine blessing in Abraham because of unbelief. A remnant will be grafted in again after the tribulation, and once more blessings will flow to all men through Israel. And then the phrase, the ingrafted branches, or the wild branches that we're going to see here in a minute, that Paul describes, they are the Gentiles. The ingrafted or the wild branches are the Gentiles. And it's important to note that the wild branches are grafted directly onto the root and not to the trunk, and not to the good branches. This is important because the trunk represents the race of the Hebrews and the good branches, the Jews themselves. So when God grafts a believing Gentile onto this good root, the Gentile does not become a Jew, nor does he become of Israel, but he enters directly into the blessings promised by God to the Gentiles through Abraham. And this is not the physical promises. This is not the covenant promises of being in the millennial promised land, and that these are the spiritual blessings that the Gentiles partake of. Genesis 12:3 says, "And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed." Well, this is the theme that Paul develops in these next few verses. So while God is acting disapprovingly with Israel, but with the prospect of restoration of Israel in mind, he is also acting with the present redemption of the Gentiles in mind. So during this period, when Israel is not the channel of blessings to the rest of the world, he has to act with the salvation and the redemption of the Gentiles as well. So it is in this next section that Paul develops the parable of this olive tree. And it's a wonderful parable. And it tells us a great deal about our position and the Jews' position and the church's position during this time frame. So chapter 11, verses 17 through 22 says, "And if some of the branches be broken off, and thou being a wild olive tree, wert grafted in among them." And remember, who is Paul talking to in this section? It is the Gentiles he has called out. "So wert grafted in among them, and with them partakest of the root and the fatness of the olive tree. Boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee." Meaning, you're not the ones holding up the root. You're not the ones holding up the tree. It's the root that's holding you up. So don't be boasting about why you're here. "So thou wilt say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in." Well, because of unbelief, the branches were broken off, and thou standest by faith. "Be not high-minded, but fear. For if God spared not the natural branches, take heed lest he also not spare thee. Behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God, on them which fell severity, but toward thee goodness. And if thou continue in his goodness, otherwise thou also shalt be cut off." Oh my goodness. Woo! Now there are several important lessons here. Now, the first is that the believing Gentiles are represented as being a wild olive tree grafted into or onto the root of a good tree. Now, when we look at verse 24, Paul will call this an act which is contrary to nature. And we're going to hold off on explaining what that means here in a minute, and we'll talk about that when we get to verse 24. But as you read this section of verses, and it talks about the breaking off of branches, including the Gentile branches, there are a lot of people out there, and it could easily raise a problem in your mind. It seems to contradict Paul's teaching in chapter 8 regarding the eternal security of the believer. You break off a branch, what happens? Why is that branch broken up? Does that mean that you're not saved anymore? Now, Paul's reference to the branches being broken off is certainly intended as a clear warning to the Gentiles. And some people have incorrectly interpreted this as Christians losing their salvation. Now, notice I said incorrectly. So what does Paul mean when he says in verse 21, "For if God spared not the natural branches, take heed lest he also spare not thee." Now, certainly God says in chapter 8 that nothing can separate the child of God from his love, yet here God speaks of the danger of being cut off. So, as with interpreting of any section of the Bible, to get to the true meaning, you can't just read this one verse by itself and think about what it says. You must consider the full context from which this was written in. The subject matter of chapter 8 was what? It was the church. Not a physical, local church, but the body of true believers. How to become saved, how to become a member of the true body of believers, and how God will not allow you to fall once you have been saved. Once saved, always saved. And I know some people don't like to have use that, but once saved, it is the security of the believer. There was nothing you did to earn your salvation, so there is nothing you can do to earn your loss of your salvation. And you can't forget that. You can't take one section of the verse and say, oh, that's a contradiction in the Bible. Hey, there's no contradictions in the Bible. And if you think there is, I'll just tell you there's not. And then we can go on down the road, okay? But the subject matter of chapter 8 was the church, not the physical local church, but the body of true believers. Here in chapter 11, it is the Jews and the Gentiles and their relative positions. The three different groups must be dealt with separately because God does not deal with each group alike. He deals with the church, he deals with the Gentiles, and he deals with the Jews, and he deals with each of them separately. So in Romans 9 and 10, as we have seen, Paul has been discussing the Jews, and his whole purpose has been to win the unbelieving Jew to accept Christ. So the message up to this point has been to the unbelieving Jew. Now in verse 13, in last week's verse, he distinctly says what? I speak to you Gentiles. Now this means that the warnings of this section are not addressed to the church, which is made up of both believing Jews and Gentiles at all. Rather, they are directed to the Gentiles. Now next, we need to observe the symbolism that's here. The olive tree was one of three different plants to which Israel is compared to in the Old Testament. The fig tree represents Israel's national privileges. The vine represents Israel's spiritual privileges. And the olive tree represents Israel's religious privileges. Now, the word religious privilege, and I'll just make sure everybody understands it, and I'll repeat it three or four different times here. That's the religious privilege of being the channel of God's message to the world of salvation. That's the position you hold with that religious privilege. So it is this reference to the olive tree that gives us a clue as to Paul's true meaning here. Paul has told us that the Jews had lost their religious privileges for the time being. During the church age, they're no longer the channel of God's salvation to the world. In the Old Testament, some 25 passages threaten the Israelite with the penalty of being cut off from his people. It is a judicial death that is meant in these passages, not necessarily an eternal death. So those so cut off, of course, lost all privileges connected with the covenant of Abraham, except for the believing remnant. This was happening to Israel on a national scale in the time that Paul was preaching and teaching here. This judicial breaking off was the result of the unbelief on the part of the Jews. Because of their unbelief, the Jews as a nation were temporarily set aside or cut off from God's religious position of privilege. That make sense to everybody? Okay? So, Gentiles, through faith in Christ, were being grafted in to replace the broken branches. Now, since temporarily the Gentiles have been given the religious privileges once held by the Jews, Paul is saying that they must be wary of religious pride. So by their acceptance of the gospel message, they have come into the systems of blessings initiated by God with Abraham. When we became saved, we came into the blessings, spiritual blessings, that God has promised Abraham. But like the Jews, these Gentiles can be cut off from those religious privileges which are so graphically pictured here by the olive tree. God doesn't play privileges. If he's going to cut off his special people, he can cut off the Gentiles as well. Now think of the olive tree not as representing salvation. Because you got saved doesn't mean that you're on this olive tree. You're on this olive tree because, as a believer, God has placed you in a place of spiritual privilege. Okay? So you're still saved, but yeah, that is one part of being grafted in. But the olive tree represents spiritual, religious privilege, not salvation. So now God has shifted the religious privilege temporarily to believing Gentiles. But Abraham, who is the root, or Jesus as the root, whichever one you want it to be, is still there. The trunk of the tree is still there. He didn't break the trunk off. He didn't break the root out. He didn't do anything. He just broke off some of the branches that were there. And so they are the wild branches, or the Gentiles, the believing Gentiles, are the wild branches being grafted in place of the good branches that were broken off. Now, this illustration is about religious privilege, meaning the group whom God is using as his outlet for the gospel message. During the Old Testament, it was the Jew. During the church age, it is the Gentile. During the millennial reign of Christ, it will return to the Jews. And that is God's promise. And that is what we're going to be talking about here today. So as we consider this illustration, we must remember that the root, meaning either Abraham or Jesus, and the trunk, meaning the race of Abraham, of the good olive tree, they're still alive. And where some of the good branches were broken off, the wild olive branches are grafted in amongst them, not instead of, and thus become a partaker of the root and the fatness of the good olive tree. We don't replace Israel. We simply are amongst them. Okay? So we see from this that the good olive tree, and that's the whole reason why we're not grafted onto the trunk and why we're not grafted onto the branches, because we don't become a Jew and we don't become of the race of Abraham. We're grafted into the blessings and the fatness of the root so that we grow and we are born up by those spiritual blessings. Everybody understand that? Okay? So we see from this that the good olive tree is not rooted up and destroyed with a wild olive tree planted in its place, but it still remains alive, and it gives life to both the good and the wild olive branches, the grafted in wild ones, as well as the good ones that still remain there, okay? So in verse 18, Paul warns the Gentiles to boast not against the branches, meaning that they are not to have an anti-Semitic attitude, and to remember that they did not bear the root, but rather the root bore them. And all you've got to do is go out and look on the internet and Google anti-Semitism and realize just how long the Jews suffered before the United States was created as a nation. It really wasn't until the United States was created a nation that the Jews found themselves a place where they could come. If you think about Europe, you think about England, you think about Spain, you think about France, they were run out, they were persecuted, they were a part of the Inquisition, they were challenged, all because the religious leaders accused them of crucifying Christ. That was where the anti-Semitism all came from. And it was channeled all the way through history, up until really very, until the 60s and 70s, when Israel then was able to form a nation in, what was it, 1948, I believe, is when they were able to form a nation, but it was really the formation of the United States where the Jews actually found a place where they could live without persecution. So this is what Paul has been warning the Gentiles about. Hey, you're in this place of religious privilege. Don't be proud. Don't boast against the branches. So that will say then the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in, meaning, hey, God got rid of them so that he could graft me in. Well, that's not the case at all. And Paul anticipated the Gentile pride over the fact that God had rejected the Jews and had accepted the Gentiles. So Paul clearly tells the Gentiles that the fact that the Jews' rejection stemmed from their own unbelief and not because God found the Gentiles to be so special. The Gentiles weren't special at all, any more than the Jews were special when God called the Jews out of the Ur of the Chaldees. They were both pagans. They were both sinners. God is so gracious that He called them anyway, not because they were special. And God did choose them because of His grace and their faith in Jesus Christ. The Gentiles' acceptance based on their faith removes any basis for Gentile pride. You didn't earn this place of special religious privilege. God gave it to you based on your faith. Instead of feeling superior, the Gentile Christian ought to have a sense of reverential awe. So Paul says, "For if God spared not the natural branches, take heed lest He also spare not thee." Now notice Paul's strongest warning here. If God did not spare the Jews, then He will also not spare the Gentiles. Meaning if God didn't keep the Jews in a position of religious privilege based on their unbelief, then He certainly will not let the Gentiles remain in a position of religious privilege if they display pride and boastfulness for the position that He had placed them in. "Behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God on them which fell severity." So next, Paul reminds the Gentiles of God's goodness and His severity. Now, the word severity means to abruptly cut off. Now, to be abruptly cut off by God is a very serious event. Paul calls upon the Gentiles to behold two examples. Rejected Israel reveals the severity of God, but to the Gentiles who have turned to God, the benevolent goodness of God is revealed. So you have both His severity and His goodness being revealed in the examples in the way God has treated the Jews and the Gentiles. The two sides of God need to be revealed today. The judgment of God against the rejection of Christ against sin, and the grace of God to those who will trust Jesus Christ. It is a lesson that our world needs to hear today. God is not just a God of love. God is not just a God of judgment, but God is a God of love and judgment. He is a just God, and He is a gracious God. But He has severity, and He has goodness. And that's the lesson that we find in this for today. So then we move to God is dealing with Israel dispensationally. He's been dealing with them disapprovingly by removing them. Now He's going to begin to deal with them dispensationally as well. Now, to reinforce the idea that the Gentiles have nothing to boast of, Paul continues this same illustration to show that God has every intention of ultimately restoring to Israel all of her former privileges. So first he shows that it is within the power of God to restore Israel. It is within the power of God to remove Israel. It certainly is within the power of God to restore Israel. Verses 23 through 24, the 11th chapter of Romans says, "And they also, if they abide not still in belief, shall be grafted in," meaning the Jews. If they abide still, not still in unbelief, they shall be grafted in. So as a Jew today, if you accept Jesus Christ and you become a member of the church, you're grafted back in just as well. "For God is able to graft them in again," meaning God has the power to graft them in again. Now, what Paul's really talking about here is not the Jew accepting Christ during the church age, but really at the end of the tribulation period when he begins to graft them back in. And we'll see that that's true here in a minute. "For if thou wert cut off out of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, and were grafted contrary to nature into a good olive tree, how much more shall these, which shall be the natural branches, be grafted into their own olive tree?" Now here's where we get to verse 24. So without doubt, it is within God's power to restore Israel. Now to prove this, Paul makes the statement that it would be a much easier task to graft back in one of the original good branches than it was to graft in the Gentiles, which would be a wild branch, and it would be an event contrary to nature. So here's that last statement, contrary to nature. So the question that comes to mind is, why would Paul say that the grafting in of the wild branches was contrary to nature? Now the answer is a true demonstration of the wisdom and the power of God. So pay attention as we learn about our wonderful and powerful God here. So author W.M. Thompson provides an answer to this question. He tells us that the olive tree, in its natural state, is a wild tree. It bears really no berries or very few berries, and those berries that it does bear really don't have much oil in them at all. And so they are small and they are essentially without oil. So they're useless to a farmer who wants to collect the olives and grind them and create olive oil. So certainly this is not what a person wants who intends to harvest the olives. Now the olive tree is wild by nature and must have good branches or branches that come from a fruit-bearing tree grafted onto the wild root before the wild tree will bear the fruit. But here, Paul speaks of the reverse, the grafting of wild branches onto a good root. And you say, well, Keith, wouldn't it make more sense to graft wild branches onto a good root instead of taking good branches and grafting them into a wild tree? Yeah, well, nature doesn't work that way. You know, so what Paul's talking about here in this illustration is taking wild branches and grafting them onto a good root. And he says that's contrary to nature. And this is true because, generally speaking, within nature, and especially with the olive tree, if you graft in a wild branch upon a good root, it never succeeds in producing a fruit-bearing tree. Instead of the good root causing the wild branch to begin bearing fruit, the wild branch essentially conquers the good tree and the tree becomes wild. It fails to produce olives. Now, if you didn't know that, you wouldn't understand Paul's illustration here. But as olive is a crop in the Middle East, and the people there that he was talking to knew all about this, they knew that this was true, that if you graft a wild branch onto a good root, which is essentially what Paul is talking about here, that the wild branch conquers the good root, and it no longer bears fruit. However, if you reverse that, and graft a good branch onto a wild root, then it's the good branch that conquers the wild root and the tree will begin to bear fruit. And so that's what the farmers do. They graft good branches from a good tree onto a wild tree and the good branches conquer the wild root. And now it may take 7 years or more for that conquering to take place, but the good graft will cause the tree to begin bearing fruit. And then that tree will bear fruit for generations of people. The olive trees are old, and they go and they continue to go. And you can actually get 15 barrels of olive oil out of a good olive tree that's growing berries instead of on the wild. And so that's the way nature works, is it's the branch that conquers the root. And so what Paul is saying, if you want to have a good tree, you can't graft in wild stuff. That's contrary to nature, but that's what God does. And so if we follow Paul's illustration of grafting a wild branch on the good root, then it shouldn't work, right, if we follow nature. The wild branch should conquer the good root, and the whole tree should become wild or stop bearing fruit. However, it is only in God's kingdom of grace that a process that is contrary to nature can be successful, and it is this process which Paul has used to show the power and mercy of God. God has indeed been merciful to the Gentiles by grafting them onto the good root of Abraham and the trunk representing the race of Abraham. This action of taking wild branches of believing Gentiles and grafting them into the spiritual blessings of Abraham is what Paul is describing as contrary to nature. So this is really a wonderful description of how God deals with the Jews and the Gentiles. If Paul says that the grafting in of the Gentiles, which is contrary to nature, has been so fruitful, just think how wonderful it's going to be when God grafts the Jews back into their own. Now, is that not just an amazing illustration of the power of God to accomplish His purposes? All right, so I got a decision to make. Guys, I took longer than I thought I was going to take to get to this point. So I think I'm going to stop because I don't want to get halfway into a topic and then stop. So I'm going to stop right here. And we'll start up with verse 25 next week.